Test for English Majors 2013 Grade 8 Part 1 Listening Comprehension Section A Mini Lecture In this section, you will hear a mini lecture. You will hear the lecture once only. While listening, take notes on the important points. Your notes will not be marked, but you will need them to complete a gap-filling task after the mini lecture. When the lecture is over, you will be given 2 minutes to check your notes and another 10 minutes to complete the gap-filling task on answer sheet 1. Using no more than 3 words in each gap, make sure the word or words you fill in is or are both grammatically and semantically acceptable. You may refer to your notes while completing the task. Use the blank sheet for note-taking. Now listen to the mini lecture. What do active learners do?
Good morning. Today, I'll discuss what is active learning and, what do active learners do? In order to define active learning, I'll look at the differences between active learning and passive learning by examining 6 characteristics of active learners and contrasting them with those of passive learners. Okay, let's start with the first characteristic. Active learners tend to read with the purpose of understanding and remembering. I bet that no one deliberately sits down to read with the purpose of not understanding the text. However, I'm sure that some of you have been in a situation, probably more than once, where you read, quote and unquote, an assignment, closed the text, and thought, what the world was that about? When you interact with a text in this manner, you are reading passively. Active readers, on the other hand, set goals before they read and check their understanding as they read. When they finish, they can explain the main points and know that they have understood what they have read. Now, the second characteristic of active learners is to reflect on information and think critically. Being reflective is an important part of active learning because it means that you are thinking about the information. In other words, you are processing the information. For instance, you may make connections between the new information and what you already know, identify concepts that you may not understand very well, or evaluate the importance of what you are reading. An active learner reflects constantly in this way. In contrast, passive learners may read the text and listen to lectures, and even understand most of what is read and heard. But they do not take that crucial next step of actually thinking about it. Let's move on to the third one. The third characteristic is to listen actively by taking comprehensive notes in an organized way, like what you should be doing now. We lecturers are always amazed at the number of students who engage in activities other than listening and note-taking in their lecture classes. We've seen students reading newspapers, doing an assignment for another class, or chatting with a classmate. Perhaps the all-time winner for passive learning, however, was a student who regularly came to my class with a pillow and fell asleep. Unlike these students, active learners are engaged learners. They listen actively to the professor for the entire class period, and they write down as much information as possible. To be an active note-taker, you must be more than simply present. You have to think about the information before you write. The fourth characteristic is to get assistance when they are experiencing problems. Because active learners are constantly monitoring their understanding, they know when their comprehension breaks down, and they ask for help before they become lost. In addition, active learners often predict the courses, or even particular concepts within courses, that may give them trouble. They have a plan in mind for getting assistance should they need it. Active learners may seek assistance from their professors or peers. Although passive learners may seek help at some point, it is often too little too late. In addition, because passive learners do not reflect and think critically, They often don't even realize that they need help. The next characteristic is to question information. This means that active learners raise questions on information that they read and hear, while passive learners accept both the printed page and the words of their professors as truth. Of course, active learners don't question everything, but they do evaluate what they read and hear. When new information fails to fit in with what they already know, they may differ in the conclusions they draw or in the inferences they make. The last characteristic, which I think is the most fundamental one, is to accept much of the responsibility for learning. Active learners understand that the responsibility for learning must come from within, while passive learners often want to blame others for their lack of motivation, poor performance, time management problems, and other difficulties that they might experience. When active learners don't perform as well as they'd hoped, they evaluate why they didn't do well and change those studying behaviors the next time. Passive learners, on the other hand, often approach every course in the same manner and then get angry with professors when their performance is poor. It is only when students accept the responsibility for their own learning that they can truly be called active learners. So, from what I've said so far, you can see that being an active learner involves both skill and will. By skill, I mean the tools to handle the studying and learning demands placed on you, like how to read with purpose, when and where to get assistance if you are having difficulty. By will, I mean the desire and motivation to follow through. Here, I'd like to emphasize that skill is nothing without will. For example, you may have a friend who is knowledgeable but not motivated in the classroom. Even though he reads widely and can intelligently discuss a variety of issues, he does little schoolwork and rarely studies. In other words, students such as these may have the skills to do well, but for some reason they simply do not have the will. And because skill and will go hand in hand, unmotivated students, those who do not have the will, may experience difficulty in college. Okay, today we've discussed the differences between an active learner and a passive one, and some useful study strategies that may eventually help you become an active learner.
Now you have 2 minutes to check your notes, and then please complete the gap-filling task on answer sheet 1 in 10 minutes. Section B. Interview. In this section, you will hear everything once only. Listen carefully and then answer the questions that follow. Mark the best answer to each question on answer sheet 2. Questions 1 to 5 are based on an interview. At the end of the interview, you will be given 10 seconds to answer each of the following 5 questions. Now listen to the interview.
Good morning, Mr. West. Nice to have you on our program.
Good morning.
Okay. We all work, or very few people can get away with not working. Work is a fact of life when we're adults. But before, there wasn't a lot of choice in the selection of work. Now things are different. With greater mobility, the mobility that is offered when people have greater opportunities for higher education or training, more and more people are able to choose the fields that interest them. They can and do have opinions about what makes one job for them better than another job. So, Mr. West, what do people actually want from their jobs? What are workers' opinions, you know, about what makes one job better than another?
Well, to answer your questions, I'd like to look at 2 polls, 2 surveys. They were both done in the 1990s. The purposes were to find out what issues or job characteristics were especially important to workers.
What were they?
Some of you might guess that the answer is obvious.
I think so.
You might say, oh, people just want higher salaries, more money. But let's see if that's true.
Okay.
Now, the first poll was taken in 1990, and this poll asked respondents to choose what was the most important to them among 5 items. And they were only allowed to choose 1 out of the 5 items.
So, what were the 5 items?
All right. The first item was important and meaningful work. The second was high income. The third was chances for advancement, promotion, and so on. The fourth item was job security. And the fifth was shorter work hours. Okay?
It would be interesting to know the survey results.
Yes. Now, let me tell you the results. 50% considered important and meaningful work the most important characteristic of a job. They didn't choose high income. Interesting. Anyway, 24% did say high income was the most important characteristic of a job. Of the remaining, 16% said chances for advancement was most important. Maybe these were younger workers, starting out on a career. 6% said job security, and finally 4% said shorter work hours was most important.
I think what's striking about the results is that, by far, workers valued important and meaningful work as more important than any of the other characteristics that included salary.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to tell you about another poll, and this poll was taken a year later in 1991. And it asked the respondents to reflect on how important certain job characteristics were in their work. And this is a different type of poll because whereas in the first poll respondents had to choose only 1 out of 5, in this poll they wanted the respondents to react to each item separately. You know, this is to rank each item as not important, somewhat important, or very important. So they had 4 choices for each item.
Sorry to interrupt you. How many items altogether?
Oh, the poll had 16 items. Let me give you a few examples.
Okay.
The second item they asked about is interesting work. They asked, how important is interesting work to you? And again, I'm just going to tell you about how many people said it was very important. In this case, 78% of the respondents ranked this as very important to them.
78%?
Yes, 78%. This is a key point, I think. One often sees people working for a lot less if they enjoy their work.
That's true.
The fourth item they asked about was opportunity to learn new skills. How important is that to you? 68% rank this as very important, and I think that goes again to the idea of interest level, personal satisfaction, and the idea that people want their work to be meaningful.
Definitely.
Another item, item number 7, recognition from co-workers. 62% of the respondents said that this was very important. It was important for them to be recognized, to be respected, and acknowledged for the work they'd done. And I see recognition as a psychological benefit. There's no monetary reward necessarily attached to it, although sometimes there could be. But more people are looking for the psychological reward in terms of appreciation.
It seems to me that people value psychological reward a lot more than money.
That's right. At least the poll results seem to say so. Now, let's take a look at another item, number 14.
Okay.
Number 14 was chances for promotion. 53% said that this was very important to them. It was important to them to have opportunities for advancement, chances for promotion. And I think this goes along with high income and recognition. There's both a psychological reward to promotion as well as a monetary reward. 15 is contact with a lot of people. Some people are very people-orientated, and 52% said that this was very important to them.
So we can see workers do have a lot of things that are very important to them.
Yes, but you can also see the variation in numbers. But a note of caution here. These are averages, and the polls talk about averages. But still, I think it's important for employers to become more aware of polls like these, because it might allow them to keep their workers satisfied in ways that maybe they hadn't thought of before.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much, Mr. West, for talking to us on the program.
Pleasure. Section C, News Broadcast. In this section, you will hear everything once only. Listen carefully and then answer the questions that follow. Mark the best answer to each question on answer sheet 2. Questions 6 and 7 are based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you'll be given 20 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the news.
A Moscow company is now marketing sleep boxes, freestanding mobile boxes with beds inside, for travelers stranded overnight or those in need of a quick snooze. The sleep boxes are meant to be installed in airports and rented for 30 minutes to several hours at a time. A sleep box is currently installed at the Sheremetyevo International Airport in Moscow. We travel a lot, and many times we face a problem of rest and privacy in airports, says co-designer Mikhail Krymov of design firm Arch Group, who together with Alexei Gorinov came up with the idea of Sleepbox. And as we are architects, we like to think of solutions. Measuring 1.4 meters wide, 2 meters in length, and 2.3 meters in height, Sleepbox's star feature is a 2-meter-long bed made of polymer foam and pulp tissue that changes bed linen automatically. It also comes with luggage space, a ventilation system, Wi-Fi, electric sockets, and an LCD TV.
Question 8 is based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 10 seconds to answer the question. Now listen to the news. Police in London are lining up a huge police operation for the Notting Hill Carnival in the wake of the rioting and looting that hit the city earlier this month. More than 1 million people are expected to head to West London over the course of the colourful two-day event, which features music, parades, dancing, and stalls serving up Caribbean favourites like jerk chicken and rice and peas. Some 5,500 officers will be on duty at the carnival on Sunday and 6,500 on Monday, a public holiday in Britain, with 4,000 additional officers deployed elsewhere across the city on top of usual police numbers. London's Metropolitan Police said Commander Steve Rodhouse said creating a safe environment at the carnival is a top priority for the police force. Questions 9 and 10 are based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 20 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the news.
Growing up starved of calories may give you a higher risk of heart disease 50 years on, research suggests. Researchers in the Netherlands tracked the heart health of Dutch women who lived through the famine at the end of World War II. Those living on rations of 400 to 800 calories a day had a 27% higher risk of heart disease in later life. It's the first direct evidence that early nutrition shapes future health, they report in the European Heart Journal. The Dutch famine of 1944-45 gave researchers in Holland a unique opportunity to study the long-term effects of severe malnutrition in childhood and adolescence. A combination of factors, including failed crops, a harsh winter, and the war, caused thousands of deaths among people living in the west of the Netherlands. The women who were aged between 10 and 17 at the time were followed up in 2007. The team found those who were severely affected by the famine had a 27% greater risk of developing heart disease than those who had enough to eat.
This is the end of listening comprehension. Please proceed to the next part.